Chapter 2. The Friedland's eastern regions were dominated by great forests, from the chilly pine fells in the northeast to the verdant green span in the southeast. The northwest was renowned for harsh mountain ranges with names like the Iron Breakers and the Black Cliffs, jutting from the mainland into the frothing waves of the Green Current Sea. The southwest of the mainland was splintered into tiny islands and peninsulas, with swift, salty rivers and stagnant swamps running between them. In the middle of the Friedlands, the great plains of Bonn spread for leagues. From the plain's center, Mount Windspar thrust upward like the gnarled toenail of some long-buried titan, and all along its southern slope sprawled Andoran, the highest city, the gleaming gem of the Friedlands. Legend held that Andoran had once been the greatest city on Arth, in the early ages when it was the high seat of the kingdoms of the Sten. Then the Sten betrayed the rest of mankind, and were subsequently wiped out in retaliation. The armies of man were quickly driven away by a dragon, which was followed by hordes of lizard men, who fell to the gremlins, who were slain by an ogre tribe, and so on and so forth. By the time the freedmen liberated the city from the rule of Ogmar the Mad, one could barely walk down Central Avenue without tripping over a priceless relic from a long-faded conflict. Of course, no one could even venture near a sewer grate for fear of giant spiders or venomous scargs or any of the other monstrous denizens that had never fully been expunged from the city. Ironically, these ancient threats were key to Andoran's rapid gentrification. Dangerous monsters and abundant treasure attract heroes. Wealthy heroes in need of gear attract merchants. Well-to-do merchants attract industry. Industry needs workers, who need developers for housing, who need builders and laborers, who need services. The ancient ruins beneath Mount Windspar fertilized a blooming economy on its surface. Within an age, Andoran was again the greatest city on Arth, this time built atop the most deadly dungeon on Arth. In Andoran, one could wake a nameless fear or two just by digging a wine cellar.
"The city's built on big steps carved into the mountain back when the Sten were around," Gorm told Gleebeck as they made their way through Andoran's crowded streets. "The lowest step is called the base, and the top is the pinnacle. Every step starts in the ridge," he said, pointing to the rough cliff face that cast the western side of the city in shadow, "and ends at the wall."
He turned and pointed to the giant stone edifice that made up the eastern mirror of the ridge.
"Azaba,"
Gleebeck said with a low whistle.
"Aye. The wall and the ridge cast long shadows down here on the lower steps, but Andoran rises to their tops, so up near the pinnacle where the uppity-ups live, the wall ain't much taller than a hedge. Good views, I'm told."
"The Grongo?"
"Everything's better by the wall. The view, the light, the smells. Course, everything's more expensive, too. Makes Andoran almost like a map of society, you see. The higher up the mountain you go, the higher your status. The closer to the wall you are, the more money you have."
"Wrong! The Nubroot Hepsut!"
"So if we get separated, head down toward the base and west to the ridge. Eventually you'll come here."
Gorm rounded a bend and gestured down an alley that was deeper and darker than most swamps.
"The pub?"
"Welcome to the Underdim," grinned Gorm. "They don't get any more ridgeward or baseward."
Gleebeck shivered and peered into the gloom.
"That's Pabo."
"It's one of the worst neighborhoods in Andoran, and that's saying something."
Gorm started to trundle down the alley and into the Underdim.
"Course, that means it's where you'll be most welcome."
When he'd been on the road to Andoran, walking with Gleebeck had earned Gorm withering stares, whispers, and more than a few unwelcome offers from aspiring heroes to eliminate his goblin problem. Here in the Underdim, nobody looked twice at him for walking alongside a goblin. Shadowkin, as the cursed races were collectively known, were common down in Andoran's baseward tiers. There were few people in the narrow streets, but a large part of them were orcs, gnolls, kobolds, goblins, and gremlins. Between the ridge's shadow and the walls and other buildings rising above it, it was never really day in the Underdim. Even at mid-morning, a handful of crude torches illuminated haphazard rows of shacks. A few of the older hovels had been built atop rooms hewn from the granite side of the ridge, but most were cobbled together wherever building materials could be scavenged. The streets were surprisingly clean, save for a few bleached skeletons lying in the gutters. Nothing edible lasted a night on the Underdim's gravel roads. This was where you dropped a body that would never be found. This was where you sent a man you didn't want to hear from again. This was where you holed up when you needed to be unseen for a while. Or, Gorm thought, this was where you came to find someone who had done all of those things. There were few bars around, and all of them were private venues. Those denizens of the Underdim who could afford to drink didn't like doing so in the company of strangers. If you passed out in the wrong company or the wrong place, you weren't going to wake up. It took Gorm some searching to finally find a flimsy shanty with dim light leaking through holes in the wall and the clinking of tin tankards sounding from within. A peephole slid open as Gorm and Gleebeck approached.
"Password!"
barked a gruff voice. Gorm punched through the frail door, grabbed the lookout, and slammed him against the doorframe 3 times.
"That work?" he said.
He heard the hurried sounds of a lock working, and then a battered-looking gnoll opened the door. He stood a head shorter than Gorm and wore a thick crimson coat below a hound's face that looked like it had been banged into a door jamb even before Gorm had banged it into a door jamb. His hackles were up, but his tail was between his legs as he muttered,
"I've got papers, hero. I'm not a foe anymore."
"And I ain't a hero anymore," said Gorm cheerfully, brushing past the knoll.
Gleebeck scampered after him. Bar would have been too generous a term for the establishment. A few wagon wheels and broken axles had been fashioned into makeshift tables. Lonely figures huddled on large rocks placed around the tables. Behind a bar constructed from an old door stood the barkeep, a thin, bespectacled man above the counter, but a tremendous serpent beneath it. A sign hanging from the decrepit rafters proclaimed the establishment as Angus's.
"You must be Angus," said Gorm, stamping up to the bar.
"Angus," corrected the serpentine barkeep, polishing a glass. "The middle S is silent."
Gorm tried not to scowl, but failed. Nagaw were very particular about their mispronunciation.
"I'm looking for the mask. Any idea where it is?"
"Maybe I know something. Maybe I don't," said Angus.
"Maybe this'll help."
Gorm plunked a single gilton on the table. The Naga eyed the thin golden coin, unimpressed.
"You made quite a stir on your way in," he said, nodding to the knoll sulking by the door.
"It's all relative. Compared to how I leave, if you don't help me out, that was downright chummy."
"Big talk for a man with only 1 sovereign to spare."
"Fine," said Gorm, fishing a second coin from his belt pouch. 2 gilton. Who is he these days?"
3.
2 and a complete set of internal organs."
"I've got enough internal organs."
Gorm patted his axe a couple of times.
"And you'll answer me if you care to keep it that way."
The Naga flicked a forked tongue over his teeth, considering. Then he snatched the coins from the bar with the tip of his tail.
"I hear he just got back from a job up in Scoria with Damrod the Eye."
He resumed his work with the dishes.
"On an unrelated note, I hear a dwarven blacksmith by the name of Foblerson up in Lowly Heights is away on business."
"And the Eye?"
"Away on more business, they say."
Gorm thanked Angus, left the bar, and made for the stairs on Meissen Avenue. The stairway up the mountain passed through a small arch in the wall at the edge of the base, guarded by a couple of bannermen. Gorm kept his eyes firmly on the timber and iron steps as he passed them. It was only 1 tier up and a couple of blocks wallward to Lowly Heights, but the residents clearly thought they were halfway up the mountain. They were the sort of folk who believed in hard work and clean living. The houses were just as slapdash as those in the Underdim, but most had a coat of whitewash over their ramshackle exteriors, and all of them had a neatly trimmed strip of lawn in front. Gorm stopped by a street vendor selling 10-cent beef rolls near a small park, which is to say, a tree and a bench on the side of Mudfog Lane. The hawker's cart was new and sturdy, but it had been intentionally weathered with sanding paper and a careful paint job to resemble the decrepit crates on wheels Gorm remembered from his childhood. He ordered a beef roll for himself, and then a second for Gleebeck after the goblin gave him a pitiable stare.
"Can you point me in the direction of Foblerson's forge?"
Gorm asked as the vendor fished around in the cart for a couple of buns. Half a block wallward, take a left down Maylie Alley by the rose shop.
Much obliged.
Gorm pulled a shilling from his purse for the beef rolls and nearly dropped it when the hawker asked for 3 gilton.
3 sovereigns? The sign says 10-cent beef rolls.
Because we're a franchise of the 10-cent transportable edibles company, said the vendor with well-practiced indifference.
But 1.5 gilton each. It's banditry charging so much.
Can't charge what the market won't bear, said the vendor. Few things in Andorran are cheap, friend. You want these with onions?
They cost extra.
No, sir. Condiments are free. Moments later, Gorm and Gleebeck made their way toward Maylie Alley, carefully balancing towering mounds of fried onions, sliced peppers, assorted relishes, and spiced mustard atop their beef rolls. Gorm surveyed the streets thoughtfully as he chewed. The streets were thick with humans, a few dwarves, and every variety of gnome, most dressed in the red or blue coveralls of factory workers. A dwarf in old mail and a goblin in a cat-pelt loincloth stuck out enough to attract more than a few glares.
Listen, he told the goblin. You got to learn to keep a low profile, Gleebeck.
Wrong, not Gleebeck, Tibrin.
No arguing. There's a lot of fish in the sea, and if you make any waves, they'll eat you. Got it?
Grat.
Good.
Gorm shoved the last of his beef roll into his mouth and turned down Maylie Alley. Foblerson's forge was little more than a crumbling hearth and an anvil in front of a decrepit hut. Before Gorm approached it, he ducked down a side alley and pushed around to the back of the shack. He had to search through a pile of crates and rags, but eventually he found the nondescript black trunk he was looking for. With a wink to the puzzled goblin, he pulled a long ruby dress from the trunk, tucked it under his cloak, and headed back to Foblerson's forge. A gnarled old dwarf with gray streaks through his braided black beard was trying to beat a piece of iron into submission. The misshaped hunk of metal remained heatedly defiant.
"Afternoon, Mask," said Gorm.
"Name's Foblerson," said the smith, without looking up from his work.
"Is it?" asked Gorm loudly. "Well, Mr. Foblerson, can I ask what you intend to do with this?"
He held the red dress up high. A hush fell over the alley. All eyes turned to Gorm and the smith. Most of the common folk know little of dwarven reproduction, as dwarves are famously taciturn about matters of sex and procreation. However, it is clear to everyone that something is different about dwarven courtship. There are no dwarven couples, no visible dwarven courtship rituals, and crucially, no dwarven women. Every dwarf in existence is male, and by all appearances, solitary, until he shows up with a tiny, bearded baby strapped to his back and flailing a toy hammer. A plethora of humorous theories and jokes about how such a child might come to be born can be heard in any alehouse on Arth, provided there are no dwarves present. Rumors of a dwarf who owned a dress were certain to draw exactly the sort of attention the mask loathed.
"But you're joking!" barked the smith. "And come inside," he added under his breath.
"Thought you might say as much," said Gorm, following the mask into the shack.
The front room of the smithy was as one might expect, filled with spare tools, dusty ingots, and a number of weapons and tools in various stages of completion.
"You know what you've done?"
grumbled the smith as he led Gorm and Gleebeck into the dingy back room.
"This place was perfect! Foblerson's out of town for a month, and now I gotta find a new spot, 'cause folks will be poking around and asking questions."
He stepped behind a musty curtain.
"I've come as I need a favor," said Gorm.
"That's the only reason anyone ever sees you."
The smith tossed various articles of clothing out from behind the curtain, a pair of heavy gloves, a leather apron, a jerkin and trousers.
"It's been a while, hasn't it?" mused Gorm.
"Not half long enough."
Behind the curtain, the dwarven silhouette was warping, stretching into something lithe and tall. The mask peeked around the curtain, and Gleebeck squeaked in fear. Its face was like an ash-gray canvas, featureless save for a pair of eyes the color of sunset.
"Don't worry," Gorm told the trembling goblin. "The mask never stays his true self for long."
Already the creature's skin was changing to a pale pink, with oily gray hair sprouting from its head. His eyes blinked and became dark irises, and a new nose and lips were twisting into a deep scowl as a thin mustache sprouted above it.
"Nobody's got a true self," said the mask in a new, reedy voice, a bureaucrat's voice. "Everybody is trying to look like someone else, even to themselves.
We're just more honest about it.
Huh, said Gorm. Doppelgangers ain't honest about anything.
Touché, said the mask, ducking back behind the curtain. A moment later he emerged in a neat dark suit and a pair of stylish silver spectacles. So how can I get rid of you? Gorm nodded to his companion.
This here's Gleebek.
Is he now? The mask cast a sideways glance at the goblin.
Gleebek, Dagob Tibrin!
He needs his non-combatant papers, said Gorm. You're going to sponsor him.
And then you'll stay out of my face?
Aye, any and all of 'em will be square.
The mask nodded. Fine. And who should I go as? He asked. His face shifted, the nose becoming thick and hawkish, the skin shifting to a ruddy hue, a deep scar tracing over his right eye, an unkempt rusty beard suddenly spilling down his chest.
Maybe I could go as you, he said in Gorm's voice.
Gorm shrugged.
You want to walk into the guild looking like that? It's your funeral. Just see that Gleebek gets his papers.
The mask laughed darkly as he shifted back to himself. Why are you helping a goblin? Why do you care what happens to him?
That's my business.
I know you, Ingerson. You don't stick your neck out for nothing. There must be a reason.
That is?
I'd like to know it.
That's your problem.
If this goes badly, the mask said slowly, I'll disappear, and you won't find me again. This is all on you.
Look, first thing in the morning, you take Gleebek here into the guild.
Dab Tibrin!
You sign his papers as a sponsor, you leave. He scampers off to, I don't know, be a shoe shine, and I clank boots out of Andorin. We'll be done by lunch. What's to go bad? Said Gorm.
The doppelganger studied Gorm carefully. Well, he said eventually, I imagine we'll find out tomorrow. Martin rubbed his elbows as he hopped down off the cart. A cold summer rain chilled the roots of his bones, and the damp alleyway running off one of Aberyth's back streets offered little by way of shelter. It offered little by way of anything. The alley was nothing more than two granite walls with a couple of yards of cobblestone and a single door between them. Martin's nerves were raw, and there were butterflies in his stomach, but he was fairly certain he had all his angles covered. Not that fairly certain was good enough. Fairly certain could get you killed. Still, fairly certain was the best he could do. This was his first job without Horold, and the planning had always been Horold's gig. Martin didn't like working alone, but nobody was going to associate with someone who owed Benny Hookhand money. Besides, if this job went according to plan, he could pay off Benny Hookhand and have a tidy sum to spare. And if the job went sour, he doubted it could be any worse than what Benny Hookhand did to poor Horold. Best get this over with, he muttered to himself. Taking another second to steel himself, he hurried toward the small red doorway at the end of the alley. The doorway opened to greet him.
Did you get them, halfling?
Course, just like I said I would, said Martin, brushing damp curls from his eyes. Conventional wisdom said that halflings were called halflings because they were half as tall as men, although some liked to add that they were half as smart or worked half as much. Of course, people who said such things were half as likely to wake up with their coin purses. Most halflings held notoriously flexible views on the nature of property and ownership. A lantern flared, illuminating a face that made Martin jump back. One good eye studied the halfling from a gnarled mess of scars and white stubble.
Let's see him,
the man grunted, pulling his crimson hood up as he stepped out into the rain. Surely, Damrod. Martin had never worked with Damrod the Eye before, but the mercenary was well known in some circles, and not for his patience. The halfling nodded and hurried around the cart. You might want to cover your nose. They stink, even with the ice.
Let's see 'em, Damrod repeated.
Martin pulled the tarp off the back of the cart and tried not to retch at the smell. The man in the crimson cloak didn't even flinch. Damp bodies on thick slabs of ice glistened in the flickering lantern light.
Five?
Asked the mercenary.
Six, answered Martin. Got an extra, just in case. Extra value, that.
Damrod's eponymous lone eye squinted suspiciously at the corpses.
They already smell. How long will they keep?
Martin had foreseen such questions.
Months. They smelled like this by the time I got them to the wizard, but he says they won't get any worse, as long as they're on the enchanted ice.
The mercenary nodded.
That will do.
And the gold? Said Martin.
Inside.
Damrod pointed to the dark doorway. Martin was prepared for that as well.
In a heartbeat, he drew a throwing dagger and trained it on the mercenary's good eye. I'd rather not, if it's all the same to you.
You don't want to get paid?
I certainly do, Martin corrected him. I'll send an associate to collect next week.
Why go to the trouble?
Said Damrod, without much concern for the knife Martin had aimed at him. Because this job's out of my league. A big step up for me. And when you work in, covert acquisitions, if you weren't chosen for your reputation, you were probably chosen for being expendable.
That's so.
Oh, certainly, said Martin. It's plain to see I'm good as dead if I step through that doorway.
I can see you've thought this through.
Well, I tried to plan for everything.
You almost did, too, said Damrod the Eye.
He snapped his fingers. There was a soft click from the shadows and a wet thump from Martin. The halfling stared down at the shaft protruding from his chest, dark dampness blooming around it. Hidden crossbowman, he said. Should have seen that coming.
Well, to be fair, this job was out of your league, said the one-eyed man.
Martin thought Damrod was smiling for the first time that night, but it was hard to tell because the alleyway was starting to run together like ink on a damp page. The ground fell away from him until he caught up to it, and then he was gone. Gorm sat at the fountain in the square of Tamanthan East, on the fourth tier of Andoran, in the shadow of the wall. The square was set beside two lanes of broad steps, divided by two sets of track, running all the way from base to the uppermost levels of the city. The broad steps were the fastest way to ascend or descend Andoran's tiers, despite the crowds streaming over them. People of every race and creed rushed up and down the mountain on the stair, and the tracks were filled with carts of goods and materials being sent up and down the mountain. Commerce blooms beside streams of people. Street vendors and specialty shops were as thick as weeds around the broad steps, enjoying a steady flow of customers trickling in from the stairs. Looking up the mountain, Gorm could see the turquoise dome on the rooftop of the Andoran Stock Exchange. He could hear the shouting of the commodity markets from the lower tiers, and even catch mercifully faint scents of the stockyards drifting in from outside the city walls. The whole wall thrummed with comings and goings, business and trade. It was an easy place to go unnoticed, and that made it a good spot to meet with the Mask. This particular fountain was about as high up the mountain and as close to the Heroes Guild offices as Gorm was willing to venture. When the Mask arrived, he did so as a bow-legged, toothless human in factory coveralls. Gorm wouldn't have known who it was without Gleebeck bouncing after him, happily waving a small green booklet.
"Papers!"
the goblin said excitedly.
"Well, look who got his non-combatant papers," said Gorm, suppressing a small smile.
Non-combatant papers gave creatures that were automatically classified as foes a means to become productive members of society. Perhaps more importantly, they enabled them to opt out of being slaughtered and looted by professional heroes. They granted a form of limited citizenship to the bearer, provided he or she was carrying the papers. An adventurer who was found guilty of harming a non-combatant paper carrier risked losing points toward advancement, accruing demerits, and even paying steep fines. The tiny green books were the single most effective defense against professional heroes.
"His conditional papers," corrected the Mask. "He's not an NPC until he gets a job."
"Shouldn't be a problem," said Gorm. "There's plenty of work in Andoran for an enterprising young goblin, so long as he ain't got standards. All we need to do is—"
Something bright flitted in front of Gorm's face, forcing him to shield his eyes.
"Hey, here he is!"
Gorm looked up at a tiny winged figure glowing with such intense blue light that it seemed to be standing in a sphere.
"Blood and ashes," he swore. "A cert sprite."
He turned to the Mask, but the doppelganger was already elsewhere, and presumably else whom. The sprite hovered and danced excitedly about a foot above Gorm's head.
"Here he is," it trilled. "It's Gorm Ingerson."
"Bones,"
Gorm swore again and hurried off toward a Ridgeward side street. Gleebeck scuttled after him.
"Grat Gabba."
"It's a tracking spell," said Gorm. "It knows where everything and everyone in the area is, and it'll tell you all about it. Big moneymaker for the wizards. Town guard, tax collectors, anyone who wants to find something or someone, they'll all pay good gold for a search sprite."
Gorm cut through a small alley, crossed a causeway and a small park, crossed Nubble Street, and generally tried any maneuver possible to obfuscate their trail as they made their way toward the stairs down. Gorm considered trying to blend with the crowd, but blending is difficult to do when there is an orb of light hovering above your head and screeching trivia.
"He's walking down the street! Here he is! Look, now he's turning left! See that? There's a baker's shop! You can get bread there! Now he's turning right! It's a weapon shop! Swords are sharp! Hey, he's still walking! Now he's talking to the goblin!"
"All they are is a bit of knowledge with a mouth," Gorm told Gleebec as they walked. "They only exist to tell you obvious things, so they don't shut up till they wear off. Could be days."
"Hey, listen!" shrieked the sprite. "He's ducking down this alley! He's stopping by a rain barrel! Rain barrels collect rain! He's taking the lid off! Ah!"
"You gotta be quick to catch him,"
Gorm told Gleebec over the tiny, muffled protests. His arm shook violently, and pale light flickered between his fingers as the sprite struggled to escape.
"And they're stronger than they look!"
With a grunt of exertion, he thrust the sprite into the rain barrel. The barrel rocked and splashed and flared with azure incandescence. Gleebec put his hand over his mouth.
"Nixed it!"
"Don't pay it no mind," Gorm grunted. "The thing ain't even alive, really. Just a spell."
Gorm gripped the side of the barrel and kept his fist submerged until the water was still.
"I think," he added. When he withdrew his hand, it was empty. "Anyways, it was Mir the sprite," he told Gleebec as they made their way down the alley. "Can't have it following me if I'm gonna dodge the guild."
"Happily, that is no longer a concern," said a Tinderkin, stepping from the shadows. To Gorm, Tinderkin, as the gnomes of Clan Kendrin were most commonly known, always looked as if someone had shrunk some elves until they stood just a little shorter than the dwarves. The Tinderkin approaching Gorm had sharp features and a lithe frame. His leather armor was as black as the hair he had pulled into a neatly cropped topknot. He wore a slender blade at his hip, a neatly trimmed goatee on his chin, and a smirk on his face that reminded Gorm of a predatory reptile of one sort or another.
"Gorm Ingerson, I presume," he said.
"I'm afraid you're mistaken," said Gorm.
"I should be more afraid that I'm correct, if I were you. My name is Mr. Flynn. I command the Company of Silver Talons, acting on behalf of the Temple of Almatra."
He gestured to a small silver medallion set in his gauntlet, emblazoned with an eagle's outstretched claw.
"So you ain't with the Hero's Guild, then?"
"Oh, no, not at all," said Mr. Flynn.
It took effort for Gorm to conceal his immense relief.
"Well, then,
Mr. Brunt here represents the Guild of Heroes," said Flynn, pointing up and behind Gorm.
Gorm looked. An ogre eclipsed the alleyway behind him. Mr. Brunt had a pair of arms like tree trunks, and tattoos of weapons, flames, and half-nude ogresses covering them like moss. His sloping brow overhung two beady eyes and rushed to connect with his gnarled nose. He wore a vacant, angry expression, as though he was furious at everything and ready to take it out on anything.
"Mr. Brunt and I have some business with you," Flynn continued, "and your associate as well."
Gleebec held his non-combatant papers out like a shield.
"Poppers!"
he squeaked.
"Indeed," said Mr. Flynn. "Keep those close, my friend. Who knows what could happen without them? But I digress. We were hoping you'd join us for a drink at Fula's Pot to discuss a promising opportunity."
"Ah," said Gorm. "And we have a choice?"
"Oh, there's always a choice. Choice is a constant."
Flynn grinned, a cold glint in his eye. "It's consequences that vary." High above, Brunt rumbled something unintelligible, and yet quite clear.
"Well, well," Gorm said, "I was just thinking how thirsty I was."